I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
I'm Miss Taylor.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 354th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new. And this morning, we're talking about Star Trek Con Episode 8, Original Sin, written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack, story by Nicholas Meyer, directed by Fred Greenhalgh. And you might have noticed I said this morning instead of my usual tonight. That's because we are streaming / recording this Wednesday morning instead of the usual Friday evening. Because Halloween fell on a Friday this year, and we wanted to participate in Halloween celebrations in the evening. And we decided to, because these episodes come out on Monday, it was pretty easy to rearrange our schedule, so... But thank you everyone who was able to join us live despite the shakeup in programming time. We do appreciate it. And you know who also we appreciate are the Text Trek Patreon supporters. So before I go any further, let me just give a big shout out and thank you to the Text Trek Patreon supporters: Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Quarkspar, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A, Joel Vallis, Arthur Lamoureux, our associate producer Chris Garris, Dave Farabee, Dave A. Gregory, Joe Saperito, Wanda Valentine, Rin, and our anonymous supporters. Just a reminder, we will have our next Patreon watch party on November 15th, open to any and all patrons to attend, and you can join the Text Trek Patreon as little as $2 a month. Goes a long way to help us continue to do the weekly live show. And we should probably go ahead and dive into this episode pretty quick. I feel like there's some big happenings here. But I'm just going to quickly recap Episode 8, Original Sin, by reading the official synopsis, and then I'll kind of expand on that with spoilers. And then we'll get into sharing our thoughts on it. But the synopsis reads, 5 years after disaster sweeps the planet, Khan's people and the Elborians prepare their joint single venture toward salvation. Khan learns the truth behind their predicament. And yeah, it's been a 5 year leap forward in time post the death of Marla / birth of Callie, and they're now ready to launch their ship they've built together. And we learn that Delmonda did indeed have a secret. The Elborians were in fact hiding something. They chose the system they were gonna park in, knowing that they might destroy a planet on arrival. But the Elborians destroyed SETI Alpha 6, therefore cursing Khan's people, but not intentionally. But I guess that didn't really change things, learning that, because Khan said, well, I already, from the very beginning, always plan to betray you and take the ship, and me and my kid are just going to go leave this planet. So we're getting ready to leave. And, oh yeah, wouldn't you know it, Ivan's still alive. Survived on the surface for 5 years, so we'll have to wait until next week to see what role he plays in the finale. But that's where we are going into the final episode.
I think Ivan should have walked in on the last scene and just been like, oh my god, you're still working with the aliens?
Yeah. Well, I have a theory on both A, how Ivan survived for 5 years, and B, what really happened to that other cave full of Elborians. Like, Ivan had to be eating something, so. He's like, you haven't ate yours yet?
You think he's been leveling up, slowly killing him?
Yeah, each one he consumes, he gets more powerful.
Yeah, he gets 20 experience points per Elborian.
Yeah,
and like, but, you know, if you get the whole camp.
Whatever they're a specialty in, like, if they're, like, an engineer, then he gets, like, a little bit better, like, engineering skills.
We have to have one weirdo theory every week, so.
Yeah.
Looks like we're locked and loaded, but yes. Taylor?
You want to give the first opening statement?
I had a good time with this episode. It was jam-packed, which I guess we're expecting, you know, these last couple episodes are going to be pretty full. I was really surprised about the time jump. I don't know why I was not thinking about having one, and that really surprised me. And, like, having Kali in the episode really surprised me. I was like, oh, we're really moving forward here. And I wasn't surprised by a lot of Khan's actions. I was surprised about, like, Mado and Ursula interactions. But, yeah, I think still my favorite parts are, like, the Dr. Lear stuff. Like, I'm still so wrapped up in that. And, like, her, like, conversations with Sulu and, like, what are her motives and, you know, what, like, I'm ready for the reveal. Like, I can't wait for next week so we know for sure. I mean, I feel like everything does point towards what we've all speculated is that she is the daughter of Khan and Marla, but I'm ready for the confirmation.
You know, as you're saying that, Taylor, I just want to add, it occurs to me, I don't think they've ever described anything about how Dr. Lear looks, which I guess they don't really go into that description for any of these characters, but, you know, maybe she does, like, kind of resemble Khan or Marla, or, you know, look like someone who would be their kid, so, like,
super bronzed skin and long white hair.
But even if, yeah, that'd be funny if, like, growing up, she just looks like a little girl version of Khan from the Wrath of Khan.
This is just how kids are.
But I guess that could be kind of an advantage of the audio drama medium, is that, like, you won't know what someone's face looks like, so that can be kind of a reveal later, you know?
But I also think it can't be, whatever it is, a dead giveaway, like, you know, because Sulu or, you know, other people would have made this connection previously.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It's got to be, she's got to basically look normal, you know, augments. Mm. You know, if they weren't wearing the red jumpsuits or those, what is it, rust-colored, you know, survivor gear from Wrath of Khan, then, yeah, I guess they could look normal. You could clean one up, get them a shaven haircut.
But if this was a TV show and they had cast a young woman who, like, you know what, like, she kind of has a Khan-ish look to her, it'd be like, well, you know, maybe they are going to reveal that she's his daughter, so.
Yeah, in that sense, it is easier, I think, having the audio medium.
Anything else, Taylor? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Dave, why don't you give your opening statement and just share your broad thoughts on the episode before we get into the episode breakdown in a second?
All right, so finally, for a little bit of dramatic purposes here, we have an episode that I'm a little bit more shaky on than the others. I do think this episode has a lot going for it. It's the writing quality has not dropped. You know, and there was a lot of beats they hit that I was into, from, you know, really emphasizing at the end that Khan's sort of lack of imagination will ultimately sabotage him, has been sabotaging him the whole time. I like seeing Ursula and Mado kind of struggling to connect again. I really liked seeing Paolo seemingly ready to fight the good fight when it comes to this kind of final confrontation. And I definitely took note that how important Dr. Lear's last name might be and how relevant it might be as we learn that Khan's daughter, Kali, had a special love of Shakespeare.
But that's a great connection. That's what went over my head.
Yeah. I don't know how they spell it, but, I mean, you don't get more Shakespeare than Lear. But that said, there was something I mentioned last episode, and that it kind of became more pronounced for me in this one. And that is that I do have a kind of a disconnect with this never previously mentioned incident with the Elborians. You know, it's, and now we learn that they spent like 5 years working alongside them of what I think was about 15 years on the planet. Is that right?
It depends on which line of dialogue you... It's debatable what year the Wrath of Khan takes place, so...
Okay.
Maybe 12 years, maybe 16 years, but yeah, somewhere
over
around
a decade,
there.
Then. Yeah, no matter what. I think it's, like, what they're doing is very interesting. They've created a really interesting moral conundrum. It feels like a kind of a classic Trek episode like we've talked about. But I also kind of find it just wildly, totally dissonant with that sort of very minimalist story that Khan told. You know, I just picture them eking out their survival on this land. And I know you can't make a story that you're like, that's not a story you can expand on. They had to expand in some way. But for me, like, the farther you get from that vision of what Khan told Chekhov and Terrell, it runs the risk of sort of feeling, oh, like it doesn't count, like it's fan fiction or something like that. And here it was pushing my buttons a little bit. I was like, man, that's 5 years, and there was no obvious evidence. I guess it was all in the cave underground. But it's kind of, you know, when you do prequel things, it's you sort of run that risk, like, oh wow, you know, Superman had this whole adventure as a kid on Krypton that we had never told about. Okay, maybe, but you know, like, it kind of weirds my brain out, and I also wasn't in love with the Elborian reveal about their complicity in the thing. It didn't feel like it had enough to it for me to say, oh wow, that's amazing. As one of their kind of big reveals. So I liked a lot of the incidental stuff, the internal stuff. The voice acting was great as always, but overall the episode had me a little like, I don't know about that on some of the big things. And I don't know if anybody else is feeling that, but we'll continue to talk about it, I'm sure, as we go along.
Yeah, Dave, actually, I do feel quite a bit of that, but I'm not sure as severely as you do. But it was something you had said a couple of weeks ago when they introduced the Elborians, and you said that, like, oh, this is such, like, a big surprise, I don't know if I'm going to like it. It's just so weird to be like, oh, by the way, there were aliens on City Alpha 5 with Khan also. And I wasn't that thrown by that, and it might have been, as we discussed at the time, I kind of always thought that someone else would show up on the planet. Way back when they were talking about doing this as a TV miniseries, I just kind of thought, you know, what would you do for 3 6-hour, I think it was going to be like 3 2-hour episodes, or maybe it was going to be 3 1-hour episodes. I was like, what would you do with all that time? Like, you know, you'd probably, to shake things up, you would have like some alien enemy show up, you know, give Khan someone to be matched up against, you know, but it never occurred to me that, like, oh, what if these aliens, like, cohabitated with Khan in his settlement for years. So yeah, that was very weird to me. And Khan having a relationship with a kid that we've never heard about was also kind of a weird thing to me. Like, why would he, you know, grieve his wife to Chekhov and Tyrell, but not even mention, like, oh, by the way, I also had a kid that I don't know, lost at some point, or, you know, maybe Khan knows that Callie's off safe somewhere and that's why he doesn't bring her up. I don't know. But it definitely has me a little concerned that, like, oh, this might end in a really strange place. So I kind of go into the next episode also a bit more concerned than I ever have been the whole time I've been listening to this audio drama. That being said, though, I still really enjoyed this. There were some great character moments. There were several times listening to this episode where I found myself impressed with how much I care about these new original characters created for this audio drama, like the Mado-Ursula relationship, like Paulo and Erica, the big reveal of Ivan at the end, making it, you know, really really interesting and dramatic and dangerous going into this final episode. We have this Ivan wild card, so there was definitely a lot that I enjoyed, and the general strengths of this audio drama still shone through despite my concerns. We can go ahead and go into the episode breakdown and just run through the whole thing beat by beat. Starting with that opening with Dr. Lear continuing her work, going through these logs and That's when we get right off the bat. She talks about this 5-year time gap, the alliance between Khan and Del Mondo holding all these years while they complete construction of their ship. And she also mentions, you know, like there was this original crew that was going to pilot this thing, kind of letting us know, like, okay, that was the original plan. I guess it's going to change, but originally it's going to be Paulo, the Elborian character Kimura, Joachim, and the Elborian leader Del Mondo. And Sulu interrupts Lear's work and says, hey, Starfleet wants us to get out of here. We need to leave soon. You can have a little bit more time, but we got to get going. And Dr. Lear says, okay, I'll let you know how much time I need in just a second. And she gets off the communications with Sulu and then starts to have a panic attack again about running out of time.
Yeah, sorry, I'm slightly distracted watching some interesting theories float around in the comments section about what might or might not happen with the Elborians.
But we hear some Khan here also with Tuvok also doing some research.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear, you kind of see some of those from his point of view. I actually thought for a brief time that because they were jumping ahead in time and he was like, play all of... you know, all 16, you know, selections for this year or whatever. Yeah, I was like, oh, are they going to do an interesting kind of round robin thing where like every supporting character that we've met so far has a brief segment or something? Which I did think would be kind of an interesting episode. I don't know if you want to do that as your next to last episode. And it's not really what they did, but they did jump around, you know, like as they tend to. And we did hear a number of different characters talk.
That would be kind of a cool way just to show the progression of time, though. Like, you just catch up on everyone 5 years later.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's status quo you think would be a little different. But,
it kind of is what happened. It's just that it wasn't, you know, because, you know, we're like, well, we found out what's going on with Mado and Ursula, and we know what's going on with Joachim and Erica, is it?
Yeah. And I guess the other thing that Tuvok hears is Khan discussing yet another poet, William Butler Yeats, and the poem The Second Coming.
Which... Oh, right, right. The center cannot hold? Mere something is loosed, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world, or something, slouches toward Bethlehem. I don't have it in front of me, but it's a pretty famous... It's a pretty famous sequence.
Yeah, yeah. It was about the second coming of Christ, obviously, but it was written post-World War I to kind of reflect... I guess there was like that optimistic boom in the early 1920s, which is, you know, kind of sad looking back. But, you know, it's kind of like, oh, that was the war to end all wars. And now we have like the League of Nations, and it's going to be a big peaceful era for Europe and for the world. And, you know, of course, instead we had World War II after World War I, but... But that kind of shows, you know, that's Khan's outlook here. Like, this little poetry quote being tucked into the episode here, you know, it's kind of like, this is Khan's second coming. Like, he thinks him and his daughter escaping the planet on the ship will kind of be their salvation and their rebirth, you know?
You know, something I wasn't quite clear on is when Khan, you know, I know we'll get around to this in a little bit more detail, but... The stated plan of the mission was, you know, they get out there and probably within 6 months they find somebody and they get help. Then Khan is like, I'm piloting this. I'm running off with my daughter. And then it doesn't sound like help is going to be forthcoming. They don't have a lot of supplies. But was Khan also planning to still come back for his people? Or was he just like, good luck, y'all?
They keep that ambiguous. There is like a line in here that suggests it's not a very high priority to Khan. But he never says one way or the other if he's definitely coming back with help or if he's definitely not even going to try. So maybe Khan himself hasn't made up his mind on that. He's like, well, we'll figure that out when we get there.
It depends who he finds, how fast he finds them. Because I think he thinks, you know, if it's 6 months, like everyone's already dead. We're not coming back. You know, but if it's like, oh, I found someone in 2 days, it would be worth it to come back, you know?
Yeah, maybe he is just thinking, you know, and he's not like exactly a knowledgeable space traveler, even though he's probably heard lots of theories and stuff. And I bet, Who's their engineer-y kind of guy?
Paolo's the human.
Paolo is who I meant, yeah. Even though he's probably heard a lot from him, this may be one of those cases where Khan's like, well, when we went out into space, we were out there for decades. And he's like, you know, yeah, maybe they've got warp drive or whatever. I don't know if I buy it until I've seen it. Y'all are probably going to die. You know, like, it may be that his lack of imagination kind of cropping up again.
But he is taking one of the Elborians with him. He's taking the Elborian Kimura, so he'll have someone he can bully around to do all the space engineering stuff he doesn't know how to do.
What a jerk.
But he's also a quick learner. You know, he read all of those logs on the Enterprise years and years earlier, all of those, like, engineering manuals and stuff, and he's eventually able to take over the Reliant pretty quickly in the Wrath of Khan, so I guess...
That is true, man. His people are pretty fast learners. We don't know the fate of Paolo, like, if you know, I kind of have this sense that he is not going to survive this.
Yeah, it would be cool if he's, like, you know, one of the people on the Reliant, but I don't think he's going to survive this either.
It would make sense in the sense that we know that he picks up technology easily, and he'd probably be a good person to get that ship up and running.
Yeah, and maybe he is the guy who is, like, running engineering in the Reliant for Khan. Yeah. Like, we don't really see that in the movie, but... At the same time, it would also be kind of cool if Khan loses Paolo in this final episode next week, and if it's kind of Khan's fault, and then you could be like, see, you could have had Paolo to help you out in the Wrath of Khan, but
right,
you messed that up here.
I mean, that would sort of work. I kind of like it.
Yeah. I kind of feel like Khan and Kali aren't getting on that ship. It's going to be Paolo,
yeah,
Kimura, Kali, and Del Monda, like those four, and they're going to escape. And it's not going to be, like, I feel like the ship might launch early. Like, they may all, like, Paolo, you know, is really angry later, you know? And so maybe there's, like, a rally against, especially with Ivan. He's going to come in all, like, distracting. It'll be a good time.
For, like, a rebellion against Khan?
Did I hear right that, that Paolo was, like, in a relationship with one of the...
Yeah.
One of the...
The engineer.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they said, like, you shared his bed or something like that. I forget exactly how they put it. But.
Yeah, that's in the Ursula and Paolo scene.
Yep.
When they're up on the surface. But we can move on to that stuff. The just talking about the night before the ship launch, we hear Mado talking about Kali. She's making recordings for Ursula. You know, they've been broken up ever since they lost their pregnancy. And Mado has been making these recordings to share with Ursula, possibly someday. But it sounds like Mado has become Kali's caregiver in the 5 years that we've skipped over. So yeah. That's kind of interesting. You know, yeah, it kind of seems like she'd be like a good candidate for I guess perhaps even a literal nursemaid for Khan's baby. You have this this mother who lost her baby and this baby who lost her mother. So
she was always sort of the more, I guess, tender-hearted between her and Ursula.
Yeah,
the people who were trying to have kids. I assume other people were too. But did that? Yeah, I guess we don't. They're not exactly going to say what happened with that. I guess they became concerned with. Will we survive at all? Not can we procreate?
Yeah, well, it sounded like Ursula also refused to, like, help you, the augments, have babies because she was, like, running those experiments and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And after Mado lost their baby, like, she kind of said, like, I would never bring a kid into this situation.
Yeah.
I think that was her telling Khan, like, I'm not doing this again. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
They can happen naturally or not at all.
Yeah, they're all, like, really rationing their food, so it wouldn't be a great time for anyone to be pregnant or to have, like, another mouth to feed. But, like, basically, as soon as someone's pregnant, they're gonna, like, oh, well, they're gonna need, you know, more food, more medical resources.
Right. To Khan's mind, originally, that was, you know, part of an expansionist colonizing thing, and, yeah, that suddenly became about eking out survival, so it does make sense. We're catching up with Mado, and but they're not... They're, you know, they never got back together, like, 5 years. That's, that is a little bit of a tragedy itself, you know, that they, the loss of their child was a pretty much permanent wedge between them.
It sounds like the one thing all these people kind of do have going for them, though, is, well, not everyone, but a lot of people seem to really have, like, a relationship with Callie, with, like, the little kid, because, you know, Ursula's really close to her. We see, like, the soft side of Khan when he's tucking his kid into bed and tickling her and playing with her, and...
Mado is close to her, not Ursula.
Mado. Yeah, Ursula's like the one who's not close to her.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think is actually the big wedge between Mado and Ursula. Not necessarily Mado losing the baby, but that she was so quick to turn to Callie as like her new kid. And I think Ursula just
felt like it was a rejection of their connection.
Yeah, like, she was like, I needed, you know, like...
Yeah, Ursula was like, I needed your attention and your affection. Like, I was grieving the loss of my kid, too. But, like, you were comforting yourself instead of with me, where it would have been, like, a mutual comforting thing. You were doing it with this baby. So she's, like, jealous of the baby.
Ursula. And I think she just felt a little bit too, like, Mado moved on so quick to Callie. Because Callie was easily distracted, right? And obviously wanted to have a kid, and so that... void like kind of got filled in a new way, like not the same obviously, but that kind of definitely aided Mado's grieving process more than Ursula.
And to be fair to Ursula, maybe it was just too hard for her to try to reconnect to Mado and just go back to just being a couple after she had already you know, framed her whole future as being like, oh no, we're a family. We're going to have this kid. And...
I don't think anybody in this colony is what you call a couples counselor or a therapist much in any way. They were probably not trained for that. They were trained to go and wreck people. And
Marla's no longer there.
Right?
Closest they had.
She would have been the closest they had.
Things really go to shit without her. Yeah. But we also hear that Delmonda has a relationship with Callie that, like, normally he's the guy who gives her a bedtime story. So he really is, like, a cooler dude, I think, than Khan dessert. Khan didn't even deserve the opportunity to become allies with this guy.
Right.
Although, you know, now I think the reveal about their, our crazy technology, we're, like, the most responsible people ever. And we'll actually sacrifice ourselves in service to responsibility. But we did destabilize a whole planet. That's pretty big. I don't quite see, you know, like what led them to that. It doesn't quite seem to be in their character. They seem like they'd be so cautious about something like that.
They explain when he does like the telepathic reveal to Khan about what happened. Right. He explains like their desperation there, but it was basically their only choice was to be if their spatial traversal drive broke down out in deep space and no solar system, they would be stranded and probably never find help. They had to go to a system that had habitable planets on it to make repairs. And then arriving in the SETI Alpha system, it destroyed the planet that had no life on it. And then they crashed on the planet that did have life on it.
I guess that was a little, it still seemed a little vague to me. I mean, I guess I'd see it like this. If I was driving around in a car where if I ran out of gas in some state, I might accidentally destroy the whole state, refill it, or, you know, because of the state of the car. Like, I'd be like, well, that was irresponsible of me to be driving that car around.
It's probably irresponsible for them to fly the ship, but they had to flee their planet. They were going to be, it said like they're under the threat of violence, so they were going to be killed on the planet. So they.
Oh, okay. Maybe I didn't quite pick up on that part. Who was threatening them with violence? Some other faction?
Their planet.
We do know that's right, because that was initially how they kind of slightly bonded with Khan. He was, or, you know, tried to. Yeah. They were both exiles.
So I assumed their ship was damaged because it was under fire at some point when they were fleeing.
Right. They're like, oh, we responsible people have to leave this planet. Not everybody's as responsible as us. And then, so they didn't create the conditions of their escape. I guess they had to take the we might destroy a planet ship or or the damage just caused that. I see in the audience that Joanne is saying, okay, I didn't understand any of that. That is to say, from the podcast, I have listened to it 3 times. So this is helpful. And I think maybe that wasn't super clearly articulated in there, or at least in my case, maybe just not quite satisfyingly. Like, it may be there, but I feel like they needed to kind of hammer that point home. The Elborians have become such an important plot point that I was like, oh, and they drive around in a deathmobile.
We also learned that when Khan's tucking Callie into bed, that their ship is named Venture, because Callie is this little 5-year-old who Lear said had like developed to a kid twice her age. But it seems like a kid like 3 times her age, if she's like already like a, you know, like a big fan of Shakespeare. That's pretty advanced for a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old.
Khan is like, I am the superior papa.
And then I guess like a little trivia about like, oh, the ship Sea Venture that crashed was a real ship that Shakespeare named the ship after in The Tempest.
Yeah, yeah, that is a little behind the scenes thing I hadn't quite remembered, but you know, I do appreciate that throughout these that sort of Nicholas Meyer love of literature, which was mapped onto Khan always, although he tended to really love the vengeance stuff, or that's what he was real into in Wrath of Khan. But I do like its recurrence, you know, to use it sort of emphasize this or that. Is Khan like tearfully at some point quoting like the Kubla Khan poem, you know?
That was in last week's episode.
He did that when Marla died.
Yeah, that's right.
Another thing,
when that happened.
He doesn't like that his daughter takes after him and is like more of a Shakespeare nerd. He's like, oh, I want you to like Coleridge like your mom. Why do you say Coleridge is shit and you only like Shakespeare? Like that's your mom wouldn't have liked that.
But he says it sort of teasingly. He's actually, I was slightly taken aback to see Khan, who was, you know, I was expecting sort of the Khan who was ranting and raving at this point. But it does seem like he, you know, fatherhood, I'm not going to say healed him, but that he can turn off his guile when he's around her. The guy who was going to betray Delmonda after 5 years doesn't seem to be the guy who's reading to his daughter in bed and stuff like that. But that is I feel like a fairly honest take on probably a lot of authoritarians and dictators.
Yeah. No, like a lot of
nice
like,
to their family, you know?
Yeah, a lot of genocidal monsters throughout history were probably like, you know, good tucking their kids into bed.
Right, right.
Actually, I was surprised that he wasn't completely distant from Kali. I had a little bit of a fear when Marla died. Khan would be like, I want nothing to do with this baby. Like, it'll be too hard to be around the baby because it would remind me too much of Marla. So I was surprised to see Khan and Kali were very bonded.
You know, if George R. R. Martin had scripted this, I feel like he would have been, like, cruel. I almost think, like, you know, for an audio drama, it would have been pretty rough to hear him being like callous to her, to be really cold to her. But I do wonder if that would have maybe in some ways been a better choice than to kind of at this somewhat late date in the story still be humanizing Khan.
Well, he's still in the first half of his exile though, so
yeah,
he's still got a long ways to keep going downhill. But after Khan tucks her in, you know, he was sure to have, like, this big cave meeting after she went to bed so that she's not present. Because he announces during their big meeting when they're talking about their ship plan that he's changed the arrangement with Delmonda. It's kind of like a Vader Lando Calrissian scene from The Empire Strikes Back in the other Star franchise.
I did think about that Delmonda was going to be like, this deal is getting worse all the time.
Yeah, that could have been the 80s sci-fi quote that they drop in here instead of the one that they went with. But we do learn more, I guess, but just about like the logistics of their rescue plan. As Delmonda says, at the time of this meeting, the Venture will launch in 19 hours. So the clock is ticking. They're about to evacuate the caves. The ship will travel out of the system with the spatial compression drive that the Elborians have, and should be able to find help and return in 6 months. But while they're gone, everyone else will have to live on the surface, which they've been avoiding the last 5 years. And, you know, very, very limited resources, very limited food. So hopefully they get back quick. And this is where Khan says, you know, originally Delmonda was going to command the mission, But instead, I'm going to do it. And you know, at this point, like, Khan has already set his plan into motion, his betrayal into motion. Like, they can't send Paulo on the ship because it's going to launch in 19 hours, and Paulo is already on the surface with Ursula. At, like, the beginning of this meeting, Paulo's already gone. So, you know, Khan, like, removed Paulo to be like, okay, like, his seat's going to Cali, and then, well, we can have Delmonda leave. The Pandom needs him. Look how weak these Elborians are. Like, some of them weren't even present at the cave meeting, because Khan is like, Delmonda, I thought everyone was going to show up. And Delmonda's like, well, all who are physically able to attend are here. So there's a lot of Elborians have died off. So the last 5 years have been rough on them. And Khan says, you know, we can't take their leader. The Pandom needs them. They need their telepathic bond. So I'll command instead. Yeah.
And you know, I'm trying to think, at no point does he, even when he's kind of still lying, at least somewhat, or not exposing the full truth to Delmonda, he doesn't ever say, like, you know, it's amazing what you people have sacrificed, or, you know, you are a brave race, or anything like that. I get this impression he does see it all as weakness.
Yeah, another limit of his imagination. But mm-hmm. he can't even, like, show gratitude or appreciation mm-hmm. or respect.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no, that indicates that he needs it to be all him all the time.
Yeah.
There's a part where, isn't it Cully? Doesn't she say, well, I like it on the surface or something like that? Because yeah, he does go up there.
That's when he was tucking her in. Because she's only lived in this cave. She's never been on the surface. And she was scared to go to the surface, and then Khan was like, well, do you want to stay in the caves? And she's like, no, I can't stay in the caves because the caves are going to blow up when we launch the ship.
Right.
And then Khan is like, oh, well, what are we to do? Maybe I'll have to figure out something else. And Callie is like, I guess I'll just have to be brave. Like, she's already being, like, a good sport about it. But Khan is, you know, he's planting the seed. Like, well, what if you and I just went off into space together? So
yeah, I guess he was trying to set that up for her, yeah.
I think he's trying to keep her away from Delmonda. He didn't want her present at the meeting because Delmonda is like, where's Callie? And Khan is like, what do you mean, where's Callie? It's past her bedtime. You know, why would she be right here? And he's like, well, I needed to say goodbye to her. I'm about to go up in the spaceship. And so, yeah,
these poor guys, they have no idea that Khan, in his way, was just long-term plan version of as brutal as Ivan was. Mm.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. He's an easier monster to romanticize and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, like enjoy his struggles and his triumphs and all that. And, you know, almost kind of enjoy him as, like, this character. But he's, he's just as much of a menace to society as Ivan.
Yeah. You know, what would be interesting is to see, I wonder if they'll talk about that in Lear's framing story in the final episode. You know, there has to be a heart-to-heart with Sulu and or Tuvok, and because she will have had to have learned the truth about what we presume to be her father, and mm-hmm. come to terms with that, because it does seem pretty clear she went into this hoping he would not be the monster that he was framed as, and maybe she's gotten a more nuanced view, but still a monster, I think.
And the only bit of Marla, I guess, we get in this episode is we hear shortly after the cave meeting, Mado plays Marla tapes for Callie to go to sleep. And that's when, you know, Khan, I guess, shows up in her bedroom and is like, pack all of Callie's things. I need her on the venture. But I was kind of wondering last week when we heard the death of Marla, I was kind of thinking it would be cool just to do, like, this whole episode, have, like, this be, like, the only episode with no Ren Schmidt at all. And then, so you really feel her absence, and then, like, have, like, some more Marla in the final episode. But I guess they thought they needed to sneak her in at least like a little single appearance. But you really do feel the lack of Marla in this episode,
right? There's no counterpoints really to Khan. Nobody he'll listen to.
I think it was important to have a little Marla in there because also one of my fears of her dying was, like, Kali not knowing anything about her mom. And, right. like, them being like, oh, it's too painful to talk about Marla, you know? And instead, it's very much like Khan is like, oh, what about this philosopher or this writer or whatever that your mom liked? And, oh, here are your recordings that your mom made. And It feels very much like he is still trying to keep her memory, like, a part of Collie's upbringing, which I thought was good. I mean, because I just, you know, I expect Khan to be so very cold, so, so bad, like, always. And so I had those, like, little fears of him just like, well, Marla's dead to everyone.
I think that there was an early episode, maybe like the second or third, where they essentially listened to way ahead in the tapes, like 10 years into it or like a long ways into it. And Khan sounded much more broken. And he was like, he's like, I'm going to read a story to the little ones. And he's like, if, you know, at that point you get the impression they were probably not so little anymore. But, you know, he was clearly in kind of a shattered person at that point.
So. Yeah, he's like, I'm going to go read this bedtime story to these 22-year-olds. But
That's all right. It was all probably romantic poets anyway, so.
Yeah, and he likes to perform for an audience, you know, like when he's like given his story to Chekhov and Tyrell, you know,
he kind of
he's really putting on a show for them. Yeah,
he's like, I will now deliver a soliloquy. Yeah.
Like all these other augments that survive, they're just like trapped with Khan, just like performing for them forever.
We're stuck with a drama queen.
Yeah. Pretty much. I guess a lot of cults end up kind of like that, though.
He's like gonna pause at the end of his like marooned on City Alpha 5 so that Tyrell could and Chekhov can clap appreciatively.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to like a Jim Jones sermon, it's
it's creepy.
He likes to rant and rave and carry on.
I think because he didn't get the response he wanted, that's why he put the set of eels in him.
Yeah, this will make you pay attention to me.
That's right. It was mostly just to tell him to clap.
It is interesting to me, though, when Khan orders Mado to pack Callie's things, Mado shows a lot of concern for Callie. Like, oh, is that a good idea to put her on this ship? Like, yeah, like she shouldn't go. Like she shouldn't be on that thing. So just more evidence that they've bonded over the years, I guess.
Yeah, unless, you know... So I saw it mentioned in the audience, something that was debated from our listeners as to whether it was a good idea or not. I think most people didn't like the idea. They just thought it might happen that Del Mondo or the other Alborians might use some kind of like final burst of energy to make Khan and his people like forget about them. You know, the debate was, of course, it feels like it's undoing everything that they've done in this show. But I kind of like it, I think. Like, to me, it makes more sense because then it's easier for me to square away the idea that they, you know, first of all, who knows who makes it off on the ship? Any one of them could be alive. In fact, am I correct that did Marla die, or was she in a sort of brain death? Or was that only until she gave birth?
Yeah, I think she's dead.
Okay.
But I guess like we never see them like bury the body. Like it's possible I guess someone like smuggled her survival. Like
they never mention keeping her alive or anything like that or any medical equipment they've set up for it. But
like they don't mention still having like the cryopods from the Botany Bay. But, like if you had those, like maybe you could like get her in one of them and
preserve her. Yeah, I just wondered if it was possible. But anyway, my point is like anybody could have made it off. And Khan, but if Del Mondo's like, you know, the last gift I give to Kali is that her father will not remember her. He will not seek her out or poison her life with him. And I'm going to, you know, die sending out this thought wave and make everybody here forget her so that they can truly escape. And I was like, I actually think I'd kind of like that. I think it would fit. It would explain why Khan is like, oh, now I have Genesis. Now I can go find Kali. You know, he like at no point did he give any indication he was bent on anything other than revenge. And I sort of hope it is something like that. After they said it, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I think at least it could be done.
That might even, you know, kind of explain some of Khan's insanity. I just always kind of associated with his traumatic life married with his engineered brain that might not have been the most healthy, but...
And what if he was like, he's like, there is a void in my mind. He's like, I know that there was something
there. There is a hole in your mind.
Yeah, he knows there was something there, but it was taken away from him, and, you know, that he's, you know, who does he have to blame for anything but Kirk?
But let's move on to the final preparations before the ship launch. We get a little conversation with Paulo and Ursula on the surface. It sounds like they're already sick of each other. I guess just stuck up there. But yeah, Paulo is pissed off about, you know, he's the science nerd. He's so mad he's not going on this cool astronaut space mission that's probably been like the most important part of his life, of his existence for the last 5 years. But yeah, he's sleeping with the Elborian engineer Kimura, so they have sounds like a pretty serious relationship. Paulo seems very sympathetic to the Elborians. Unlike Khan, he shows like a lot of appreciation. He's like, they're the only reason why we even have this chance of escape. I guess he doesn't know the other fact that they're the only reason why they need to flee the planet.
Right.
The show's some growth for Paulo, because in the first episode, he was the kid who was picking on Joachim for only being half augment. And now Paulo is like, oh, he's the most like tolerant and accepting of the Elborians. So,
yeah, you know, I guess, you know, you can make an argument that the teen years are a reasonable time for somebody to change direction in, you know, kind of how they were raised. You know, you can have some big shocks to the system. You know, he was always going to be a little bit more open-minded, but, you know, anybody can be pulled in by kind of peer pressure to be a little shit for a while.
But this is where Ursula says that Khan's plan is to leave her in command while he's gone, and that they're to hoard all of the rations on the surface and only feed the humans and not the Elborians. And when Paulo is like, do you think the Pandulum is going to just lay down and accept that? Ursula says, well, that's what Khan said. He said they're pacifist and they'll just take it. But yeah, it just seems like Khan is just going to leave the planet and then be like, and just let them fight it out. I don't really care. I'll have my daughter and the rest doesn't matter.
You know, Ursula's kind of been a fighter. I feel a little like, is she not, you know, has the 5 years just kind of broken her, and also not having Mado around, where she would seemingly accept that, oh yeah, that's just my lot in life, is to kind of vaguely manage this while we starve to death over the next 6 months or a year, however long they're able to stretch that out, and let a bunch of aliens die. Because, you know, she has questioned kind of many times. She questions him in this one, but she is kind of resigned to it too.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, she
did. Was it Khan is wrong and we're going to die?
When, I think it was two episodes ago, but when she went on like that that rant to Khan after they lost their kid and was like, do you think I would ever attempt another pregnancy on this doomed planet? Like, why would I want to bring another life into this world? I think like from that point on, maybe she's just kind of given up after she realized her family future wasn't going to happen. And
yeah, I think she's very broken spirited, you know, like she's just going through the motions. Like, she's lost a kid. She's felt this wedge with Mado. She's lost Mado. And then it's just like all this constant, I think, because also she's the doctor, right? And so she's seeing all of these people being like starved to death one by one. I'm sure like that just, that there's no way that you can't be the caretaker for all these people. Like, they lost 8 augments, they said, to malnutrition in the beginning.
Right.
And also like half of the elves.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like this massive combination for her. Like, as the doctor, she hasn't been able to do anything. And she's just kind of like at this point where she's so broken that she's just resigned to whatever Khan wants. And she just doesn't have any fight to her anymore. Like, she's just...
It makes sense. There's nobody there to help heal her mind, essentially. And in fact, there's only grim survivalist stuff she's been facing for 5 years.
But it is possible she might re-spark that fight in her and betray Khan in the remaining episode.
Agree.
Yeah, she was ready to ally with Ivan, or at least let his plan go earlier, and he shows up at the end. Who does he show up to?
To Ursula.
It is to her. Okay.
Yeah.
So she's going to have to make a decision.
Yeah, she's going to have to decide Team Ivan or Team Khan.
You know, I have this feeling that if she were to, she could go with Team Ivan, but if Ivan were to threaten Mado, or Mado was to try and get between Ivan and, you know, Kali or something like that, that I think suddenly Ursula is like, fuck you, Ivan. But we'll have to see on that one. But it definitely does seem like there's some sort of Shakespearean, and you know about like half of Shakespeare's tragedies end with just everybody stabbed and poisoned and lying around in bloody heaps. We might be about to hit that, man.
And we get the conversation between Erica and Joachim. They're eating rations and saying goodbye before Joachim, Khan's young champion, goes on this mission. So yeah, so that's who Khan is taking. He's like, I'm gonna have my kid. I'm gonna have this loyalist who'll be my little sidekick henchman, and I'm gonna have one Elborian to do all the space stuff we don't know how to do. So,
you know, it's ironic that Joachim, who was bullied for being a half augment, theoretically should be kind of the most sensitive soul of them all, but I feel like he kind of, in his desperate need for approval, he locked on to Khan, and he doesn't seem to be a guy who questions things a lot. He ended up not kind of being that was the role that Paolo kind of has among the younger augments, is the one who pushes back, who thinks a little bit bigger, whereas Joachim is like, you know, always kind of like, I guess we're doing this, you know? At the beginning it was like, oh, I guess we're killing the Elborians. Well, yeah, I guess this is how it's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like if I was an augment in the cave when Khan was giving the speech about who was going on the mission and he listed Kali and Joachim, I would have been like, oh, so we're all abandoned. Like, for sure, he's not coming back. Like Joachim, you know, being his champion and Kali being his daughter, like, there's no reason for him to come back. Like the ties, like the most important relationships he's taking with him.
But, you know, he did always profess a connection to his people, right?
Right. You know? And it does seem odd, you know, the guy who, like, was in tears over Richter dying and being like, no, I failed you, son. You know, like, and now if he really is ready to just dismiss all of his followers. But is it possible that the existence of Kali just shifted all of his focus? He no longer cares about his followers and makes them the top priority of his life because he just focuses on his daughter and just prioritizes her and ignores everything else. And if he does lose her, or maybe, I do like the idea, Dave, of like a telepathic Kali erasure from Khan's memory. Mm-hmm. And then he turns back to being focused on his people and, you know, revenge against Kirk and all of that stuff in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it does kind of fit, I think, that authoritarian cult leader type of thing that, you know, Jim Jones was like, oh my gosh, I hope random cultist number 39 is okay today. Like, he probably put down that air when he was, like, walking around his compound and stuff. But did he really mean it, or was he kind of always sort of egotistical and self-serving?
Right. And also just, like, needing the people to follow him and do their jobs, right? And, like, feel
right. There's a practical
even though
reason
I don't actually
rally them.
Care. Yeah, but I was just thinking about that when we were talking about Joachim, and like, he gets the repaired sword from Erica, the one that Khan gave him.
That was a sweet moment.
It was.
Yeah, that made me think like, oh, you know what? I just realized that the two most important people to Khan are leaving. Like, and that would just set off a red flag for me as one of the followers.
Yeah, and Erica has to have some suspicion, even if she did have total faith in Khan that he would try to return. You would still have to have some suspicion that maybe they won't make it, and this is the last time I'll see my boyfriend and give him this repaired sword I was working on for the last 5 years. She also, like, saved some rations for him, so it's like she was desperate to give him a parting gift, and just, like, that's all that she had in this cave.
Listen, that's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good on a, devastation-strewn world.
I was happy for Joachim, though, to get the sword back. I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, he's, you know, he kind of didn't develop, like I think, the way, say, Paolo did, but he's always been, like, you know, seemingly a person who is sort of needs approval, has, you know, could be a really good person, but like has ended up without that guidance. He's got a kind of distorted view of what's right and wrong because of his, you know, total allegiance to Khan, which we know is not gonna work out for him great when they run up against the Enterprise.
Yeah, he'll be loyal to Khan right up to the bitter end.
You know that part where he's like, you know, no, sir. He's like, you've got Genesis. You know, that bit. that was as close as he got to kind of his Paolo moment, I suppose.
Hmm.
When he,
yeah, maybe he's even thinking like, yeah, Paolo was right all those years ago.
Yeah. Oh, that's a terrible thought. but you know, like, you kind of can't live your life, I guess, as a cultist and then turn on a dime.
Then we get the, what appears to be possibly the final conversation between Khan and Delmonda, although I think it's likely they meet in the final episode, but they seem to think this is their last encounter. But Khan admits to Delmonda he was always planning to command the space mission, that he just never said anything because, you know, he wanted to make sure the Elborians built the ship for him. Delmonda reveals he's learned about Khan's past on Earth and being exiled from Kali. Kali, like, has told Delmonda more about Khan's past than Khan has, and Delmonda talks about, you know, feeling betrayed from that too. Like, you should have shared all this stuff with me. We have so much in common. We could have bonded over so much. And it is sad. You know, I actually kind of felt sorry for Khan when Delmonda points out Khan's imagination's limits and how there's like this huge missed opportunity. It kind of made me, you know, I did kind of pity Khan. It's just like, it is sad that you can't help yourself but be such this terrible bastard sometimes.
Yeah, one of the interesting questions that was raised in the framing story, you know, I think framing story mainly, what is our responsibility to people who are kind of broken like that?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, with Khan, his particular brokenness, you know, threatens hundreds, thousands, if he had kept the Genesis device, millions. But yeah, he's pitiable. He is pitiable in a way. He doesn't seem to be a person who could learn, really.
Yeah, I really liked during that scene when he says, like, oh, your imagination is limited, because that's like a callback to Marla, and Khan immediately recognizes that, mm-hmm. and is like upset. That
I was like, don't bring up my wife's words. Yeah.
Yeah, the way he said it was interesting. I felt it was very real. Like, it was almost like he was saying, you know, like, I don't know that Delmonda was actually trying to, like, poke at that particular sore spot. I think he was just saying an observation he had, but Connor's like, how dare you bring up my wife? And I was like, that was such a good bit of writing. I love it.
Yeah, because Khan is so defensive and angry and protective of Marla. But I also loved in that following scene that Delmonda mentions, like, oh, well, I had telepathically bonded with Marla. And so some of her, like, hopefulness about you, like, lingered with me.
Yeah, like her faith in Khan. Delmonda could see Khan through Marla's eyes because he's been in her mind. Right. So he saw, like, that good side of Khan that Marla MacGyver's, I guess, always saw.
And I guess, does that mean that's kind of how he deluded himself the last 5 years? Like, oh, wow, we're coming together.
Yeah, I think that does lend to it. He was like, wow, I really just kept thinking, yeah, surely this is going to be okay. Like, Khan's acting like, you know, he's participating and he's saying that all this. And I guess he's kind of thinking like, oh, he has grown. Like, Khan even said that to Ivan before he banished him. He's like, and this will show Delmonda that I have had growth. So, like, Khan knows, like, what to do and say to trick Delmonda into thinking, oh, he has grown. And, you know, and I think Delmonda having that planted seed of Marla, you know, just thinking like, oh, he'll get better and he'll get better, whatever. And like the fakeness of Khan,
empathy,
like they,
empathy was his weakness. It became his weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That kind of, you know, raises questions about Khan. Like, is that like the danger of this guy? Like, because like he is kind of likable. Like, people like Marla and Delmonda will like the guy and he'll get on their good side, but then he'll do terrible things.
I kind of like it because it's such a callback to the theme of Space Seed.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also such a common occurrence in real life that, like, people who are manipulators and narcissists will feed off of people who are people pleasers and people who want to, you know, help
others. You want to believe the best.
Yeah. And so I think that's very realistic of Khan, like, using Delmonda until, like, the very last second. And Delmonda still being hopeful until the very last second. Like, it's just such a different personality, like, a different empathy level, a different, like, vision of their future and like what they value. And so it's like, it's never gonna work out because Delmonda will always, like, the impasse will always be hopeful and emotionally led. Whereas, like, you have people like Han who are, like, always going to be manipulative and self-driven in this insane level of, like, personal gain and, like, using up anyone that they can, like, to get ahead. So it's painfully realistic.
It feels painfully relevant to our world, yeah.
Yeah, it does. So, yeah, I just wanted to point that out. Like, I sympathize with Del Monda so much because I feel like I've been in this situation so much.
Yeah.
It's sad because when Del Monda finds out, you know, all of Khan's dirty secrets, he's still very forgiving and accepting. But because Khan was always keeping these fortresses up in his mind, always keeping these secrets and maintaining these secrets, you know, Del Monda never shared his secret that, like, actually, like, it was our fault that this planet got destabilized. And so, like, when that truth does come out, when he kind of, like, just to get back at Khan, you know, like, out of spite almost, it's, like, as closest as Del Monda comes to being, like petty. But he shows Khan the reveal of the truth of, like, what really happened. And Khan attacks him and starts, you know, it sounds like he was going to beat him to death.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Until Callie walks in. But it's like that... Like, whereas Del Mondo was, like, forgiving and accepting to Khan, like, Khan just has the complete 180. He's like, oh, as soon as he can pin something on Del Mondo, it's, like, almost like, oh, now I have, like, justification to be against you. Yeah.
And probably, like, I suspected there would be some dark secret, because he's always, you know, he asked it again in this one. He's like, how could you have this much power and not wield it? This was some, Father, you know, you have a Superman podcast as well, Supermaniacs. And in John Byrne's revamp of Superman in the 1980s, there was a big plot point that Lex Luthor had this, like, supercomputer. And in the second issue of The Thing, the supercomputer tells him that Superman is very likely Clark Kent. And he is like, scrap the project. He's like, it didn't work. He's like, this is ridiculous. He's like, he has all that power and you think he would live a mortal life. He's like, power is something you use. He's like, he would never do that. It's impossible. The computer fucked up. He's like, it's all done. And it became this moment of total hubris and his misguidedness. And it's like a little out there, but it is kind of representative of the same thematic we've got here. He simply cannot, that Luthor and this Khan cannot envision a person who doesn't wield their power aggressively and, you know, dominate somebody that they would consider lesser.
Yeah, they both have limits to their imaginations.
Mm-hmm. I also think it was an interesting confession, too, that Del Monda says, you know, his people have been paying for this for the past 5 years. Like, they've been atoning for their sins, I guess is the way that he kind of...
It explains why they would try so hard to, like, you know, make sure they could shelter these humans that were living on City Alpha 5 and make sure that they can, you know, like, they volunteered, like, all those volunteers went off to the cave. It's like, they were being very protective of Khan's people.
Mm-hmm. They were like, we fucked up and we are going to pay for it. And, like, we'll try our best to fix the situation that we caused. So even though they did have this horrible secret that they were keeping, they still weren't, like, I don't think they were, like, keeping it as, like, maliciously keeping it.
Yeah. Well, you know Ivan had already killed one of them pretty early on. So they're like, yeah, we better not say shit or they're going to stomp our heads in.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, it just really... is really sad and knowing all the information, like all these people who are just like, man, like we, like it just is the worst situation. And all these people feel so much guilt for having destroyed SETI Alpha 6 and then landed on 5.
The only people I think that probably could have given an ideal ending to what like the Elborians wanted, what Del Mondo wanted, was if they had met somebody else like them where they could say, we need to share a secret with you and we're so sorry about it. We've tried to atone for it. And the other person would be like, what a terrible thing you've kept all this time. You know, we feel your pain and we're glad you shared it with us. And maybe we can both move past it now. Like that's their ideal ending. They absolutely did not get that from Khan.
Yeah. Like I, as you were saying that, I was like, okay, I can like picture that coming from like Kirk or Janeway, but yeah, it ain't coming from this guy.
No. Yeah. It was also absolutely, I was worried that Kali was going to walk in on Khan killing Delmonda. Like, yeah, I know she walks in on him attacking him, but I
yeah,
was...
Yeah, it almost happened, I think, if she had been, like, yeah. a little bit later.
Yeah, but it made me, one, sad that Kali is witnessing, like, her dad literally beating the shit out of, like, her other dad, and, like... Yeah. It's just, yeah. And her being like, no, and like her walking in the middle, like I love though that she's not afraid of Khan. Like she walks in there and she's like, stop, and you need to tell Delmonda sorry. I was like, oh, hell yeah, Kali. I was like, that is such a, such a kid thing to say, but also that she's not afraid of Khan at all to say that. Like she knows she's safe and like he's never going to do anything to her, you know? So yeah, I really enjoyed that scene.
Yeah, and Delmonda says, you know, goodbye to Kali. He says, you know, we'll always be connected. That's the strength of the pandem. So I don't know if that means, like, maybe they have some type of possible telepathic connection, or maybe he was just being colorful with his language, but that's possible.
It could allow a sort of happier ending to the framing story where Dr. Lear realizes she has a connection to these... what were they? Refugees
Elborians.
But who are like have rather high minded and you know progressive values and you know very humane and empathetic. You know that they're you know not all the entire the pandem is not completely lost that it will live on sort of through her. That'd be a nice thing to happen. I don't know if we're in for it. There's a lot of tragedy going on here.
Yeah, but as like a historian who is like concerned with like records and like remembering the past and those that are no longer with us and stuff like that, like it makes sense that Lear would be like a good person responsible with all of the pandem consciousness to go to her, you know, or whatever. It's she seems like a good and a good candidate to inherit that stuff.
It does seem like. You know, unless there's some sort of weird mind manipulation stuff going on, that Delmonda survived, that seems to be a factual thing. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully,
the last scene that we get set in the past before the framing device ending is Ursula in Marla's cargo pod. She finds Marla's phaser. It still has like enough juice for one or two shots. That's all definitely right. Gonna. Show up again in the finale.
Is it Chekhov's phaser? Not
yeah, yeah. Anton, not Pavel.
Yeah.
But she gets like that call from Ursula, who's on the Venture. You know, packing Callie's things. The ship's getting ready to launch, and they kind of make up for the last 5 years. There's that sweet apology from Ursula, where she says, you know, even though I was avoidant while you were hanging out with Khan's kid, I was happy to see you were happy and. I thought that was like really cool that you know we don't know what will happen to these characters in the next episode, but I was glad that Mado got that closure from Ursula. That was kind of cool.
It was and wasn't for me. Like I do think it was a moment that I wanted. You know, I felt and it was you want to see people reconcile, people who are in love and stuff like that. But at the same time, I was like. It took you 5 years and imminent death to get to it. Oh my God. Yeah, this is what happens on a broken colony with no therapists on it.
Yeah, it didn't feel earned.
Do you mean by the story or for her emotional growth or whatever?
Yeah, like the emotional growth like almost didn't feel earned to me. Like it just kind of felt like she was so upset, and then I'm sorry. Like there's right. like very little like, but I mean, we don't see that, you know, them talking it out or even like Ursula talking to anyone else about it really, you know? So it's really just all internal with her.
It may just be, in the moment that, you know, like, yeah, I still feel a connection to this person. It's not processed in a sort of deep way, but there is something there.
The last thing that we get in that scene is the knock on the cargo pod door and the reveal Ivan is still alive.
Crazy Ivan.
Yeah.
He's pretty boisterous. He's like, I'm back.
Yeah, he was like, you thought I died. I had a feeling he was coming back, though, because in the beginning of this episode, Dr. Lear had said Ivan's presumed death.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh, so yeah. That never like got confirmed to her. So I was like, oh, he's totally alive. So I was excited.
The final episode next week may have some reveals about some other presumed deaths.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Were y'all, so in general, were y'all happy to see Ivan back as a catalyst, or were you just like, oh, this guy again? Or
yeah, I like having that wild card going into the finale.
The guy crazier than Khan.
it makes it very, very exciting, anticipating the next episode.
Yeah.
There's going to be some physical confrontation. There's going to be some phaser shots fired.
Yeah, maybe a ship launch.
Yeah.
Maybe some telepathic shenanigans. So, and some crazy things on City Alpha 5 in the present. Because of the ending of this episode, Lear apologizes to Sulu about this whole thing, saying that, you know, she takes back the accusations against Kirk. She says, I just need like a few more hours and then we'll be ready to leave the system. Sulu says, cool. First thing in the morning, we're going to get out of here. And then Tuvok comes onto the bridge to talk to Sulu, asking for a scan. But Lear beams down to the planet without permission. Tuvok volunteers to go get her. But it's interesting, though, the scans Tuvok was requesting from the captain, he said that there were probably materials strong enough to build spatial compression drives on the planet, that kind of like weird atom smasher fuel source technology that the Elborians used. You know, Sulu and Tuvok talk about the science of that a little bit, and Sulu says, oh yeah, we used to experiment on that stuff, but you know, humans never had the materials strong enough to make it work. And Tuvok suspects, well, I think on this planet there is like a ship like that, which is interesting. If the ship is still on the planet, did it ever launch? Did it launch and return? Or, you know, what's going on there?
Man, that would be that would be messed up if like they never left, if maybe, you know, Domanda did wipe it from their memory. I don't know how you would explain Lear getting off the planet, Kali as Lear.
It's also possible that we're wrong about that. Maybe Kali is still on the planet. Maybe Kali and Ivan and Delmonda and Lear are just going to come up on that ship together and be like, hey, Sulu, we're all here.
I'm pretty sure in this episode, though, when Tuvok requests the scans, they scan it and say they didn't find anything. And that's when Sulu is like, are you telling me that there was like a ship that came and left City Alpha 5? So I felt like they'd already scanned it and didn't find anything.
Yeah, if they're sure that it is gone, then, you know, we don't know where it is or if anyone ever did return. So
right. I will say this. I think it's pretty clever that the writers on the show have come up with an ending where, yes, we feel like we've guessed some of the beats of it, but there's so many kind of different potential combinations of way things could play out, just depending on what themes they want to hammer home. You know, do they want to end on a more tragic note? Do they want to end tragedy with some hopefulness? Like, I cannot predict, what is going to happen exactly in this last episode. And like, that's pretty impressive that they've got those pieces like that.
Another thing that, you know, I'm excited about going into the next episode is I'm excited to see whatever happens with Sulu and Tuvok because of how Sulu freaks out when he learns of the possibility of another ship had come to City Alpha 5. And he says, oh, if anyone had contact with Khan and his people before the Reliant, I need to know about it immediately. So I liked that urgency.
Yeah. I'm hoping, you know, I imagine we're going to get some sort of ending that will be a bookend with, I think, Sulu or Tuvok talking to Lear, you know, possibly with some big revelations having come out, and they're going to reflect on, you know, they're going to reflect on Khan. It'll be that moment at the end of the episode where Picard or, you know, Kirk or whatever would sometimes have a moment before they cut to the credits, and they would sort of dwell on what they've learned, you know. Hopefully it'll be one of those like serious ones and not one of those ones where they're like, Mr. Spock, I think you're getting more human every day. You know, they play their little do-do-do-do music. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is going to be a little like a way-do one. This is going to be a inner light kind of episode.
Yeah, but maybe not like all darkness. I think maybe like Tuvok and Lear might get something out of the story at the end. They might.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why do they have to be in orbit over SETI Alpha 5 still? Like, the one thing I'm kind of confused about this whole time has been, like, okay, they went down to the planet and got all of these files and logs.
Could they just pick them up and go?
Yeah, and it's weird to me that they're, like, when Lyra's like, no, we have to stay in orbit, and they're kind of like, well, can we please leave? Like, you have what you came for. So it's like, I mean, I know, like, she has, like, this need to go back down to the planet. So she's right. Probably, like, looking for something else. I don't know. But it's weird to me that they couldn't just, like, do this work from anywhere and that they're still
there. It's weird that she was able to talk this Starfleet ship into staying at SETI Alpha 5 for a couple of days. Can't you just get all this in like an hour or two?
I've seen, I think they haven't fully explained it, but the way that I would rationalize it, I think is pretty reasonable. We know that like Genesis and everything related to it was like, it made everything went into super quarantine. And, that Admiral tells Kirk that Genesis in Star Trek 3 became like a political shitstorm or whatever. And so I think that probably that SETI Alpha 5 is sort of part of that. It is probably like off limits until, you know, deep survey teams can get out there in the next few years and look into it, or when things have settled down with worries on the Romulan border or something like that. But anyway, basically, I think that it may be one of those things where, like, you're not supposed to really take anything. You know, you can go down there. It'd be like investigating an archaeological dig where you're not supposed to really move stuff around. It's too quarantined. So you have to kind of do it on site. You have to get permission to even be on site. And because we have seen, I feel like especially in Next Generation, I would see these episodes where, you know, there'd be like some crotchety professor on there and he's like, oh, my life's work is to see this star explode. And, you know, Picard and crew would put up with him for a few days while they waited for it to happen. And, you know, like I've seen the Enterprise do those kind of missions where, you know, they park somewhere basically and let somebody else do their thing. That's just kind of what they're doing here. The Excelsior's parked somewhere, letting somebody do their thing.
Yeah. Although it is kind of irrational, but just kind of, something that the franchise does a lot so it can tell these stories and spend as much time on them as the story requires. Dave, while you were saying that, for some reason, a light bulb went off in my head, and I have a crazy theory. But I'm thinking, okay, we've learned why SETI Alpha 5 exploded.
Right.
We think we have a possibility of why the Elborians and Kali won't ever be mentioned. If there is some type of, like, telepathic, like, we're gonna erase Khan's daughter from his mind.
Right.
What if they get Kali off the planet in the next episode, and it's Captain Kirk is the guy who is responsible for taking her in? And because the one thing they haven't explained yet is why Kirk never bothered to check in on them. So what if Delmonda tells Kirk, like, it's important that you stay the hell away from the system. Khan can never learn that he has this daughter. I'm going to erase her from his mind, and y'all need to leave SETI Alpha 5 alone. Never, ever go back there.
God, I feel like even with that, Kirk would want to, he's like, there's got to be a better solution. You know, like, I feel like he would want to do that.
What if Delmonda tells him everyone there is dead anyways? So
I'm intrigued by your notion. Or that, like, Delmonda, like, is like, Kirk does show up. They're drawn there by the launch of the ship or something like that. He's like, they did have, like, they left, like, a buoy on the outer system or whatever.
Yeah.
And he shows up and he picks her up. But then Delmonda, as his last act, he actually, like, messes with Kirk's mind and is like, he's like, you need to forget this place. It's a place
or just lies to him. Just tells him everyone down there is dead. So leave it alone.
I could see something like that. I feel like Kirk would need the mind nudge. I think there's an interesting possibility there. The main reason I would think that they might not do it is because the same reason, like, basically for practical reasons, you know, probably didn't get Shatner to do it. don't want to overshadow the framing device characters they already have.
You could do it without Shatner. You could just have someone else describe that this happened.
It's true. It's true. I think they, just on that sort of like, you know, like in a play, you kind of keep it contained to the people on the stage. I can see them sort of wanting to do that. But Kirk plays a huge role in this. His integrity is questioned throughout it. So I think there's possibilities in the way you're thinking, Fathery.
Yeah, and like if you know SETI Alpha 5, if like the you know the dust storm on the planet was, you know, we know by the time of Wrath of Khan that you already can't pick up life signs on the planet very well.
Right.
So if Delmonda just tells Kirk like, "Yeah, no one is alive down there. They're all dead. I was just able to get Khan's daughter." And he erases her mind, so that's why Lear doesn't know her origin. And Kirk is off the hook. He's like, oh, well, I guess there's no point in me ever checking on Khan and his people if you're telling me they're all dead. You know, there's no signs of them, so I have no reason to question you or not believe you.
Right. The dinosaur scanner's not.
Yeah. Wow. So that would answer, I think, all the questions in the final episode. So I'm glad that occurred to me and I was able to get that on the record. But we'll see if that's right.
That does remind me, the one part I think, I don't know if there was anybody who kind of really thought that this was a good thing, was the, I have been and always shall be your friend.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, y'all have any other thoughts on this episode before
I wish they hadn't done that line.
The Gorn Egg section.
I have one other thought, but I want to talk about that line too.
Well, yeah, I do want to say, like, it reminded me of, like, you know, when I watched Alien Romulus a year or two back, whenever that was, I actually quite liked it. I was surprised how much I liked it. I thought it had strong writing early on. And then it kind of became a little greatest hits in the last, I don't know, act or so. And, of course, there is the line that is a callback to Aliens. And it's a big cringe line. I still like that. I still liked it. Overall, I have good positive thoughts about Romulus. I'm just like, man, why'd they do that? Damn it.
Yeah. That's same. I like the movie, but not this. That moment. Yeah. Total agreement.
So that's all I have to say about it. Like, I wish they hadn't, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
I wish they hadn't, because for me, when Spock says that to Kirk, it is such a huge, like, highlight of how different Khan and his people are versus like Khan and Joachim versus Spock and Kirk. And in this, it feels like, I mean, there's like this little bit of like, oh, Khan could have had his Spock,
right?
You know, with right. Delmonda. But I personally wasn't a big fan.
He had it with Joachim, but it was kind of in a more brutal and more simple way, you know, like Kirk was both loyal to him, but also, like, he saved, like, everybody. He saved everybody on the ship. Spock saved everybody on the ship. He saved who knows how many millions throughout the galaxy by keeping Khan from, you know... actually, I guess Genesis was going to go up no matter what. But he saved everybody on the ship.
I think this would have been fine if they had just changed the line a little bit more. You know how they... What are they
like
always saying?
Like, it echoes it, but doesn't...
Yes,
it's
you
not
know
right
how...
on the money.
How, like, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. They rework that line all the time in other ways. Yeah. And I feel like they could have done the same with this, where it was very, very like, similar, but not exact.
I have been your friend and will remain your friend, Khan. Or, like, something like that.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I would have liked that more, too.
Yeah, because like, where it's a callback.
There's sort of universal sentiments. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one, or the few, that is a thing that is going to come up in almost any sort of deep discussion about ethics. Mm-hmm. And you know, the nature of friendship or proclaiming friendship is something that's going to come up in our lives of sentient people. So yeah, they didn't have to have it be so on the nose.
Yeah.
Taylor, you've always pointed out, though, in The Wrath of Khan, ever since I showed that movie to you, how it does kind of show that juxtaposition of you know, Kirk and his leadership and how he commands, and how he has conversations with his first officer, and how he handles, you know, hearing bad news from people versus the way that Khan does that. And I think that is like a great point that you bring up here that, yeah, part of the tragedy of the missed opportunity with Del Monda, that possible, you know, that strong alliance and friendship they could have had. Yeah, they could have been like a Kirk Spock type duo. That, you know, you have the Khan, this like big personality leading man with all the big energy and confidence. And then you have the cool headed telepathic alien with the cool mental powers, you know, by his side. And you know, they could have really been something. So yeah, that is tragic.
Like the original plan, had it come off, could have been like, you know, yeah, they lose a lot of people to the conditions of the planet, but they, you know, Del Monda and his people get off world, they get help. It's not even Starfleet, you know, and then they come back and rescue everybody else. But yeah, I think Khan was never like, I will be beholden. I think he was always like, I'll be beholden to no one.
Yeah. Like it wouldn't even occur to him to sincerely ally with this guy. So, you know, it's another one of those imagination's limits.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, a great theme to pick up on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my other thing I wanted to bring up, and we don't have to super deep on this, but something I've been thinking about this whole series is how much of this is what Lear has found, recorded, translated, whatever, and how much of it are like her memories being recalled as she's listening to this. Because I feel like there's some of this we see recorded. Like, for example, like Khan and Kali talking about the writers or whatever, or, you know, they're kind of arguing or they're silly. Like, there's like that little cutesy moment. But then, like, definitely wasn't recorded Khan tickling Kali, and you know what I mean?
Right, so,
like,
right.
How much of that, like, are we getting just as the audience? Or is it us, like, getting Lear's memories, or, like, at least Kali's memories? Or, like, I don't really know, because even if it was Kali, like, it's stuff that didn't happen when she was even born. Like, in other episodes where it's like, oh, well, they're in the forest, they're in the jungle dealing with these Seti eels and whatever. But, like, a lot of that's probably not recorded. Some of it probably is, like, recorded as, like, more factual, and then it's expanding on it for us as the audience. But
I assume that it's mainly that a kind of artistic license, like, we're going to frame it as this sort of flashback of just the official journals. But once we actually kind of get into that world and they change the audio and we know we're in flashback mode, then they will skip around like that's just, you know, like it's an episode of SETI Alpha 5, the TV show.
Yeah, and it's like stuff that Lear and Tuvok are piecing together, you know, like they wouldn't hear, you know, Khan tickling Kali, but they might hear Mado talk about like, oh, Khan is, you know, so sweet with his daughter. It's so different to see him interact with her and like stuff like that. Or like, you know, they wouldn't maybe hear the recording of the SETI ill crawling up Sylvia's leg, but they would, you know, hear like people talking about, oh, this is this terrible, tragic thing that happened the other night. So
it would be
so
messed
that's how
up
I interpret
if,
it.
If she's like, if Lear was like, yeah, some of these tapes they talked about, you know, they thought Khan was being a good parent, and she was just like, he wasn't. That's those things they talked about. He didn't do those. Like, that'd be messed up. I don't think they'll quite play with us like that. I think we're meant to take it as real. Like, you know, just like you can believe this flashback. But I certainly have seen movies like The Usual Suspect where you have, you know, essentially the unreliable narrator concept.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff you're hearing about secondhand is not true.
Yeah. I would like to bring up the comment you just highlighted. MZ
Rad. Yeah, from MZ Rad.
Mm-hmm.
And can you read that?
He says, is there more than one answer to what is the original sin of the title? Is it Elborians destroying SETI Alpha 5 or SETI Alpha 6 or Khan betraying his cult followers or question mark?
Yeah, I think it has multiple meanings. I think those are probably both applicable. But also the notion of being cast out of the Garden of Eden and now you have Khan kind of casting himself out at one point in time he described as his Eden.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I would also say that, like, we find out in this episode that Khan always planned to betray him, you know, and to me that's also an original sin.
Yeah, so they both were always kind of doing the other one dirty. Delmonda had always destabilized Khan's planet, and Khan had always planned to betray Delmonda, so... But if we don't have anything else, I'll go ahead and go into the Gorn Egg section of the show, where I like to point out some Easter eggs, in-jokes, and continuity connections. I just want to point out in this episode, you know, we were just talking about the Bible, which the Holy Bible was one of the books that Khan had on his shelf in The Wrath of Khan, but also some Shakespeare, and in here, Callie mentions inheriting the complete works of William Shakespeare from her father and being a big Shakespeare fan. And, of course, the line that annoyed all of us, and it's funny because I'm actually one of the few people, I'm okay with Zachary Quinto screaming Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm fine with that. I think it makes absolute sense to mirror. Here's the alternative version of the sacrificial death to save the Enterprise from Khan. I think that worked there, but this did not work here when we hear Delmonda say, "I have been and always shall be yours, Khan," to responding to Khan calling Delmonda his friend. So... But that's all we got on the episode, but y'all heard about us talk about it for over an hour. You know how we feel about it. Please comment and let us know your thoughts. You can drop a comment on YouTube or on Spotify or on the Text Trek Facebook page or on the Text Trek Discord server or reply to my post on social medias. Just be sure to follow us at TX Trek and you can keep the conversation going over there. There was some con chatter in the Text Trek Discord server. Wanda M says, talking about last week's episode, "I Am Marla." "Another great discussion. The episode was heart-wrenching with the choice between Marla and the baby. I am fairly confident that Dr. Lear is the child of Marla and Khan." So thank you for the compliment, Wanda. And Wanda's also on the Lear is Kali fan theory bandwagon, so seems to be pretty popular. And Cassie Mack says, "My question now is whether she knows that or not. Is she hiding the truth of her augment heritage due to Starfleet's prejudice, or does she honestly not know? Is she just pretending not to know who Delmonda is and why he's choosing her to give the recording to? Or is she really completely unaware? She seems to panic when Tuvok called her out, but I didn't get much insight beyond that." So yeah, Cassie Mack brings up a good point. We know that she was hiding something from Tuvok when she said, like, "Oh yeah, this Delmonda guy just, he saw that, like, I researched, like, augment discrimination stuff, and that's why he chose me to send these logs." And Tuvok was like, "I call BS on that," so... I guess if she is Callie, we don't know how much of her past she knows. But definitely if this is like the first 5 years of her life is the only time she was on City Alpha 5, she definitely would not have like the full context of just like how bad her dad is until she like goes back and listens to all these logs. So I guess even if she did know quite a bit early on and was only lying about being an augment and lying about her connection to Delmonda, I guess it is possible that she does know, you know, much more about her past.
I have to bring something up.
Go for it.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but when earlier in this episode, Dave mentioned that Lear is a Shakespeare character, I immediately thought, oh, I wonder if Rosalind is a Shakespeare character. And I just Googled it.
It is.
And she is the witty and intelligent heroine of William Shakespeare's play, As You Like It, which we know.
That's her favorite. That's her favorite
Collie's
play.
Favorite play.
Yeah, okay. 100%. That's
okay,
that's Callie.
So there's no way. And also her, like Dave said, Lear is like kind of this crazy character who mirrors Khan, right? And so she would choose Lear as being Khan's name. So instead of being like Kali Khan or Kali,
She's like, I'm the daughter of the king. My last name is Lear. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I got chills when I saw this. So I had to.
Khan meaning king and Lear being a king. It seems inescapable.
Well,
Yeah, that was a nice little bit of concluding detective work. I hadn't actually thought of to look into Rosalind. I just hadn't mentally investigated that yet.
Well, I was too slow to think to look into either name, so I'm glad that Dave, you thought about the last name, and Taylor, I'm glad that triggered you to think about the first name, because my dumbass became just convinced, like,
okay, that's
convinced
their name.
Of this theory.
I do think, by the way, she may have had some memory switch ups too, you know, like Delmonda might have been like, hey, I don't want you to bear the weight of what you saw here in the final days of the planet. So, you know, I'm going to liberate you and give you some memory implants or something like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Delmonda, compelled by his guilt, might do some drastic things.
Yep. Maybe he learned from Khan. He's like, I guess I have to be duplicitous too, but I will do it to help. You know?
Yeah, yeah. A guilty conscience is a hell of a motivator. Mm. It'll get people to do some extreme things, I guess. But that's everything we have for Original Sin. But I am very excited. Next week at our usual time, we will be live discussing the finale of Star Trek Con. And so there were some things in here that I did say it was a little. Kind of threw me off and makes me a little uncertain about where things are headed. But honestly, after discussing all of this stuff now, I can kind of see it coming together
in a
very satisfying way. So glad we did this.
Yeah, I'm excited for that final episode. There's a lot of ground to cover, but I think it's within the scope of the writing team I've seen so far. So I think they could pull it off. It is possible they won't hit it like out of the ballpark, but. I think they're probably going to have a good story to tell, and I'll be looking for that baseline, and then anything beyond that, I'll be happy with.
Well, we shall find out soon. And until next time, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Subscribe to YouTube to watch the Text Trek podcast live or listen to us later on your favorite podcast platform. Follow Stephen Fothery on socials at TX Trek. Thank you and take care.